Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is November 11th, Friday, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words in the upper left-hand corner that say Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. Book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet, and it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years to improve the quality of my relationships and my life, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file, and if you click on it, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like. Absolutely free. You can also download an app from your app store if you type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. Before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives. It also tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those things to share with us, please feel free to do that. Call in now at 563-999-3581. That's 563-999-3581. Or email us at, you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. I've had a little bit of technical difficulties here, so I've been distracted for the first few minutes, but we're back, and we have plenty of time for comments and questions, answers, and testimonials. And we have been working with the Way of Mastery. And the Way of Mastery, this last few days, on Wednesday, we read through Lesson 28 straight through, which is quite unusual for our work with this this year. It's usually much slower to go through a chapter and stopping and having commentary. And then yesterday I began the review of Lesson 28, and we did not finish that, so we can get back to that, or we can take comments or questions from anybody who wants to pipe in about how this is working for them, resonating for them, not working for them, etc. There is a... we had a support group last night. Tuesdays and Thursday nights we have support groups that are accessible through Zoom. And last night, for the first time in quite a while, we went back to some of the Q&A sessions that were downloaded, they were given as part of the experience of the Way of Mastery. The Way of Mastery was, some would call it channeled, so it was a download from a higher consciousness to an individual, and the way it was received was simply he would start speaking and the receivings, the speaking, whatever, was recorded. And then those recordings were turned into cassette tapes or whatever was the use at that time, and then mailed out to people that had been requesting them. And then a month later, JM got another urge to give another lesson, and he sat down and started talking again. And there would be people around while he was doing this, and after he gave the lesson, there would be people who would say, "Can I ask a question?" And he would stay in that kind of meditative state and answer the questions. So that's what we were doing last night, was listening to some of the question and answer sessions that were given or received in the channeling of the Way of Mastery. And for my money, there is even deeper or more raw, poignant, I don't really know the words to say, but the Q&As can go in slightly different directions and are very deep. And one of the things that we get from the Q&As is that the phrase that your free will cannot be usurped. So you are absolutely free to pursue this work or not. You are absolutely free to make this the focus of your life and your life's work, or ignore it completely and go in a completely different direction that, you know, anybody else might call, you know, the opposite of spiritual or abusive. Or you're absolutely free to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment. And that will be the way that you create your experience of life. And this key lesson about how we are experiencing life in each moment is being created by our choice. That is pretty much the opposite of what I was taught to believe or understand from my Western world and my religious training. And so there is a wealth of different ways you can get to depth with this work or these messages. And to my eye and ear, the messages that come through the Way of Mastery are almost identical to the messages that you'll get through Guy Finley's work, almost identical to what you'll get from The Course in Miracles, or if you pursue Diedrich Wolzak's work, which is really informed from The Course in Miracles, or Dr. Michael Rice's work, which is heavily informed from both the Kabor's manuscript and The Course in Miracles work. The essence of it is we can have a greater liberty in our lives the more we move toward 100% responsibility for every emotion we create. And, of course, it's not just the emotions. It's every reaction we create to every life circumstance. It's the more we understand, as Dr. Michael Rice used to say, there are no victims, only volunteers. And the more we understand the mechanisms behind how we might be volunteering, or, as Lesson 28 was saying, as we might be calling this to ourselves, from our higher self, from our spiritual, true spiritual identity, that we might be volunteering to go through difficult things so that we can learn to express and channel the energy of love and creation and creativity and aliveness and joy and compassion in more and more challenging circumstances. You know, the egoic mind wants to avoid challenging circumstances. The egoic mind wants to always be able to predict and control where things might go so that it can create that false sense of having control or being more powerful than it is or was ever intended to be. And this work, Guy Finley's work, The Way of Mastery, Course in Miracles, certainly Krishnamurti's work, all of these are based on observation, questioning and observing things differently than what we've been fed by our culture and our religions and our governments. And lo and behold, the more we're willing to go exploring, questioning, being wide open, experiencing things full on, the more we're willing to do that with our observing position, the more we learn. And the more we approach things with the assumption that, well, this is the same as that, and so I already know this, and there's, you know, this is bad or wrong, and so we're judging things rather than allowing things, then the more we have contraction and fear and upset. And it's fairly directly observable that this is a process of creation that we're engaged in. We are creating our experience of life in each moment. And if we're not aware of how that's happening, we can't have an influence on it. If we're willing to question, to learn, to grow, to challenge what's been programmed into us, if we're willing to understand that the intellect, the conscious logical mind, was never intended to be our master, it's only always and ever intended to be our very simple tool and servant, then we can open ourselves to something else. And that's the challenge from a Way of Mastery, and it's certainly the challenge to a more bold, blatant degree in Lesson 28, where it's saying, not only are you responsible for your emotional response that you create in each moment, but Lesson 28 goes so far as to say, your higher self is calling to you all of these life experiences, even those ones that you say you don't want and that are so painful and that are so traumatic, catastrophic. And one way to process that with your conscious logical mind and make some sense of it is, why would I do that? Well, one way to make sense of it is, why would somebody go to a gymnasium and try to pick up weights that are too heavy for them to pick up? Why would somebody go out and run and try and push themselves to run farther than they ever have before in their life? The reason is to develop a strength, to develop a set of skills, to develop capacities, to develop awarenesses that don't exist in us from birth. Now, I don't know that any of that is true, and as I said yesterday as we were talking about it, I said, I don't know that any of it is absolutely true, but I do know that my experience of life gets more enjoyable, more tolerable, more joyful, the more I pretend it's true. I've had a lot of times in therapy sessions with people where they come in and they're talking about how burned out they are because they have to do this and they have to do that and they have to do there and they have to go to this place, they have to interact with that person. And a number of times, people in my sessions have gotten a significant relief simply by changing the way they think and speak about these things. If they think and speak about a situation in their life as though they're trapped and they're cornered and they've got no choice and they're enslaved by this or that, they create a discomfort, a tension, an upset within themselves. They use more energy fighting against the circumstances in their lives. And if we can get them to shift, even in the middle of a session, to think in terms of, well, I don't really have to do this, but I'm doing this because I'm choosing degree or have this job to accumulate this money to accomplish this or that, to be able to retire or to be able to put my kids through school or whatever it is. And we have people focus on the actuality of their choice, which this book is all about. There have been a number of times, too many for me to count, in therapy sessions where people have lifted the burden that they didn't realize they were creating for themselves simply by shifting their interpretation from, I'm locked into this, I'm enslaved to it, I'm a victim to it, from that to a thought that says, I'm choosing this, I could stop at any time. If I do stop, there'll be consequences, and I could deal with those. If I choose to continue, there will be consequences, and I can deal with those. And so I'm encouraging us to think about all of these different possibilities, because if you're anything like me, when you read a book like this and it says your higher self is actually bringing these situations of trauma and conflict and catastrophe to you, so that you can learn to extend love more freely, more directly in more and more difficult situations, more fully, more freely. And the last section that we read, I'm called to read it again, how to dissolve the power of fear. And the text reads, how then do you dissolve the power of fear? You dissolve it by recognizing it, by feeling it, by owning the simple fact that fear is not your master, and continuing to walk on. The ring of fear, which I speak quite deeply about in A Course in Miracles, is simply that. The ring of fear is something constructed from the inside out. In reality, in actuality, all power under heaven and earth is given unto the holy offspring of creation. That's you. When you are presented with an opportunity, you're not presented something in which you're asked to walk alone. The Creator, the Great Comforter, the mind of Christ that you are a part of is always with you. And the text goes on and says, if you accept the Holy Spirit's function as your own, if you make an alignment in your mind with the mind of the Creator, the Christ mind, the Holy Spirit, the right-mindedness, etc., then every obstacle will be removed before you reach it. The text goes on, therefore, beloved friends, where in your life are you resisting the opportunities that have been presented to you? Where have you resisted and said, quote, well, that's just not for me. I'm just not that way, really. I can't do that. Close quotes. When in fact you're merely afraid of the world and fear has defeated you. In the way of knowing, fear has no power. One simply abides and does and gives it back to the Creator and goes on. On the day when your body-mind returns to the dust of the ground, as it will, this is an old way of saying that the energy that is holding the subtle forms of matter, your molecules and the atoms together to create the appearance of something solid, when that energy of intention and will is gone, all that happens is the mind is shifted somewhere else and the body dissolves. Yet you remain as you have always been, pure intelligence, pure potentiality, pure perception. You will still be creating, and you will merely generate energy fields that will create experiences in worlds around you. You abide now in perfect opportunity to walk through your fears and your rings of fear. Therefore, look well. Notice, where do you feel a contraction? Where do you feel fear or a hesitancy? Is it in something that needs to be said to a friend? The more transparent you become, the more you merely speak when you feel moved to speak. And the more you do when you feel moved to do, the more you go where you feel moved to go, the more you laugh as you feel moved to laugh, and the more you cry as you feel moved to cry. The less resistance you have to the flow and movement of life emanating from your own heart and soul, the more you recognize your perfect innocence and the perfection of all things. The more you do that, the more you will create for yourself a mindset, a state of being, so that when the body dissolves and you are in your infinite magnificence, fear will not contract you. You will simply say, oh well, what can I create now? I seem to not have a physical body anymore. How interesting. Where you choose to resist moving through your rings of fear, as you know they exist in your current life, as you do that, you are building a prison for creation's offspring. That's you. You're building a prison for yourself, pure and simple. The world will tell you, do not trust the impulse of the heart. It's fascinating that they don't say, don't trust the mind or don't trust the ego, but they say, don't trust the heart. Yet, it is the heart and in the heart where you receive the guidance of the Holy Spirit. So then the last section is titled, The Doorway to Greater God Consciousness, The Doorway to the Greater Consciousness of the Creator Itself. Indeed, beloved friends, in the way of knowing, there is a certainty of knowing that it is the places in which fear seems to be cropping up. Those places are the actual doorway to a greater God consciousness, to a greater Christ consciousness. If there is something that you feel fearful of sharing with another, right there is your doorway. Go and share your truth for the simple reason of sharing it, not to persuade somebody, not to be make yourself right, but just to do the sharing so that you push through your ring of fear. That is all. Just do the sharing so you demonstrate to yourself you don't have to listen to fear. You don't have to do what it tells you to do. This is a very deep spiritual teaching. Pushing through your rings of fear will liberate you in ways you did not know were possible. The text goes on and says, if you feel your heart constantly calling you to live penniless on the streets of London, and it has been calling to you for 30 years, go and sell all that you have and follow your heart. Now, I know that the world has taught you, has not taught you to live in such a way, but the world is the opposite of the truth of the kingdom. Love all. Become one that serves all by extending love to yourself first. Learn to quiet the roar and the din of the world, which is nothing more than your decision to place value on how the rest of the world is thinking. Serve only the voice for truth, capital T truth, within yourself. That voice of truth within you is the voice that says, go start a garden today. And then first you think, oh yes, that would be great. I'd love to start a garden. And then you think, oh, wait a minute, I don't know how to start a garden. How am I going to figure this out? Oh, I'm probably going to fail. But I really do want to start a garden. Rather than engage that debate internally, rather than worry about the failure, the recommendation here, the invitation from the Way of Mastery is go start a garden. The text goes on and says, some would say this is living from your authenticity. I do not speak of what is authentic as being what the mind thinks. That is its social image. That is not authentic at all. That is a mask, a persona. What is authentic is what you feel in the core and depth of your being. In pure innocence, what do I mean by that? The innocent heart is not needy. It does not require selected individuals to agree with it. It does not wait until the universe nods its head in approval. The innocent heart merely knows it is innocent and acts from it and is not attached to the opinions of the world. Authenticity is the core through which Christ mind grows. Anytime you look and see that you've not been living authentically and decide to take a deep breath and let your illusions be shattered by becoming transparent, by telling the truth and allowing whatever changes that need to occur, then indeed you are growing your Christ mind. In the way of knowing, you ask yourself constantly the following series of questions. where am I being inauthentic? Where am I just showing up the way I think Harry down the street needs me to show up? Where am I being a vegetarian so that I can feel superior to those that are not? Where am I controlling my diet because I'm afraid that this substance will make me less spiritual? Where am I denying my humanity in order to present an image to another? Where am I getting up and going to the same job every day when I know in the depth of my being that I just do not want to be there anymore? Close quotes. The text goes on and says that to live authentically, in some sense, is to live alone. To live alone simply means that you're no longer run by needing to look a certain way, to succeed in a certain way, so that the judgment of the world will nod its head and give you a 10 instead of a 1. In the way of knowing, the mind comes to grasp the simple metaphysical truth that, quote, I and I alone am creating my tomorrows. If I create inauthentically now, I can rest assured that I will experience it tomorrow. If I create imprisonment for my soul now, I will experience it tomorrow. Close quotes. Because creation is eternal, it is impossible not to have a tomorrow, whether in this world or another. Beloved friends, you were created to create. You were created out of an overflow of joy and love. Therefore, live joyously, live lovingly of yourself. Dare to consider that yourself is so important that you have an obligation never to settle for less than your own authenticity. And the self they're referring to here is your higher self, capital S self, the spark of the divine mind, the higher consciousness, that part of you that can stay connected to the voice for the Comforter and the Holy Spirit, the voice for right-mindedness. That part of you is so important that you have an obligation to never settle for less than your own authenticity. The text goes on and says, sometimes that requires beginning the process of discovering what is authentically yours and not merely the influence of others. How do you discover that? You sit with questions like, where are you still being inauthentic? Where are you responding with a smile when you're actually feeling anger? Where are you responding with an okay when inwardly the answer is no? Where are you responding in fear to the substance you would put in your body? For example, well, I can't eat that because it's a very bad substance and I want to be healthy. It is the very fear that is creating a tomorrow of unhealthiness. Love heals all things. Love transmutes all things. Love embraces all things and thereby transcends all things. Where are you not allowing love to be your reality? Beloved friends, consider well the theme of this lesson. Do not be in a hurry to merely put this lesson aside. Read it a few times, and wherever you see a question instead of a statement, pause and spend some time considering it. Quietly, as though you were allowing the answer to emerge from your innocence. And then ask yourself, quote, what changes can I make so that I am truly showing up in a more authentic way? Close quotes. For those of you that truly choose to, you will find that if you abide with the message of this lesson and engage the simple, quiet questions that are asked and contemplate certain key thoughts that were repeated, you will find that much movement can occur and much liberation can occur. You are Christ. Notice the tension that might come up in you when you hear those words. You are Christ. And you are free in the world of space and time to know it as deeply as possible. And with that, peace be unto you always. Amen. So that is the end of Lesson 28. Lesson 29 jumps right into the thought that freedom is love under all conditions. So much of this is going right back into the kind of things they talked about in the third lesson with forgiveness, where the book taps into the same kind of wisdom, the knowledge that comes from the cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, where he said, you know, if you could understand what happens inside the cells of your body when you judge, you would never judge again. And here in this lesson 29, what the second heading is, unloving thoughts alter the chemical balance of your body. So again, it's the fractal nature of this book. It's the self-referential nature of this book. So we have plenty of time for comments and questions, answers, or testimonials. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. We have lots of people on the call. How can we support you today? What are your thoughts as we finish the review of Lesson 28? Does it strike you as even more intense than previous lessons, where it says not only do you create your experience of the events in your life, but there's your higher self, your higher self, your spiritual self, your true self is actually calling these events into your life for the purpose of giving you an opportunity to strengthen and grow in your ability to extend love in more and varied and difficult situations, more intense situations under all circumstances. All conditions love, as opposed to unconditional love. Love in all circumstances, the extension of the creative energy in every moment, in every situation. This, as they're telling us over and over again, is possible. And they're also telling us we're probably not very good at it when we first start. And we may be arranging life events and calling them to us specifically to strengthen our ability to get better and better at extending love, at being the presence of love in a wide variety of circumstances. Five, six, three, nine, 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 three, five, eight, one. We have 20 minutes left. I was thinking earlier about a variety of things, but here's someone with a hand up. Area code 541. You should be in the air. Who do we have?
Celinda.
Besides, is this Celinda?
Yes, it is. And I had to make sure I wasn't meat challenged today, so there was a slight hesitation there. And how are you, Dr. Tim?
I'm doing quite well, thank you. What are your thoughts about the work we're doing here?
Well, I sound like I'm beating the same drum. That's just like every chapter is just adding more and more dimension to this experience that I'm exploring with the Way of Mastery. And I just appreciate that there were several bingos in chapter 28, and I'm taking them to heart and seeing how I best can process them into my whole self. And so it's always fun. It's always fun and sometimes very disturbing, like you were saying, when you come up with stuff that that the reading brings up. But I'm very happy with the reading Way of Mastery. I feel very settled, very safe, and very willing to abide in this work until I'm called to go elsewhere, and that may be never in this life, or it may be soon, but right at the moment, I am very, very content right where I am.
And do you find that with that work, that you're called to do more reality management worksheets or more targeted journaling that Michael calls the mind shifter, or are you finding that you're doing less of that as you work with this book?
I find that these practices appeal to me more, and yet at the same time, if I feel a need for reality management worksheet, then I will go to it, and I find myself going to the very simple versions. And then I do a lot of listening into what Michael is saying. And I just go where I'm led, like that little Ho'oponopono book that I suggested to you one show a while back. That is a constant reference. Michael's work is a constant reference. And it seems like the Way of Mastery at this moment in time buttress all of them up. Also, Neil Douglas Quatz is a favorite of mine. And I just bought Dale Allen Hoffman's book, and maybe this winter sometime when things slow down, I can take a glance through it and a couple of Rocco's
books. Echoes of an Ancient Dream book?
Yes. I'm just finding I prefer simple. I prefer, like, I have a college education like a lot of people. And when I was in college, I mean, the big thing was to be the intellectual and go for the really heavy, deep stuff. And then one day, I was still an evangelical Christian at that time, but one day I had picked up at a Christian bookstore the little classic A Christian Secret to a Happy Life by a little Quaker lady, Hannah Whittle Smith. And at the time, I was reading Bonhoeffer, who I don't know if you're familiar with him or not, but he was one of the German, he was a German minister, I think, and then he was one of the people who tried to assassinate Hitler, and he ended up in prison, and he had all of these mystical kinds of experiences and was considered a very beloved prisoner by the end of his life. And I looked at him and I looked at her, and she was just simple. You know, she was just down-to-earth, simple kitchen wisdom or something. And he was this intellectual that I was plowing through. And it wasn't that I dishonored either one of them. It's just that I said, I don't need that. What I really, really thrive on is simple and basic. And yet I fall down the rabbit hole all the time, and I've come to honor my mind as well, because that's how I get to truth. I come up against what I do not understand and cannot comprehend, and I just say, oh, okay, like Creator, right? The response of Creator, oh, okay. And when I do that, I know I've had a breakthrough. So I just wanted to share those things with you.
All right. Lovely. Well, and I like to, you know, whenever anybody says, you know, I like things simple, I say, yep, there's not too much that's more simple than this reality management worksheet process and practical. Because
right.
Your mind will be busy telling you that this, that, and the other thing is wrong and needs to change in order for you to be happy. And it can't be a whole lot more simple than saying to your mind, okay, why don't you go over there by the kiddie table with some Oreo cookies and milk and play with the others, and I'm just going to sit here and ask to be shown something more direct, something more wise. And I don't figure it out. I'm not doing an intellectual process. I'm doing a very simple...
Go ahead.
You end up?
I usually end up in the white rabbit hole if I start to complicate things.
Yeah. Most of us do.
And maybe the caterpillar on the mushroom had it right in Alice in Wonderland when he kept saying to Alice, and who are you?
Well, and there are people who say that is the highest spiritual question for the beginning, the middle, and the end of any spiritual journey. Right? There are people who have had an entire spiritual career and been considered very, very high gurus, and that's all they ask their disciples over and over again at different levels. Who are you? And when you discover your true nature, you realize there are no problems because your true nature is not your conscious logical mind. And your problems are only created in your conscious logical mind.
I am watching my use of the word problems lately and figuring it out, and I chuckle every time I run into both of those. And I'm substituting challenge and your mantra of soften, breathe, soften, and ask to be shown for figuring it out. And it seems to be helping me a lot until I get down to the practical brass tacks of needing the mind to help me figure it out.
Well, and that's, you know, one of the keys in this work is that if I have any kind of tension, upset, contraction, constriction, negative emotion active in my energy system, I'm not going to be able to figure things out. I'm in a state where the way I usually talk to people about is that we have a conscious logical side of our mind and we have an emotional side of our mind, and we make our best decisions. Always we're going to make our best decisions when we've got good access to both sets of data, both pools of data. And if I have any contraction, tension, constriction, or negative emotion active in my system, my logic is offline. It can't reach the wheel or the pedals. What it's showing me might be accurate, but I have rearranged it in an inaccurate way. And it may be showing me stuff that's just faulty data. So in order to clear the decks and get logic and emotions back online in a clear, open way, I need to cancel whatever my mind is telling me when the result of what my mind is telling me is tension, nervousness, contraction, constriction, fear, etc., anger. And if I'm not willing to do that, I can't step out of the pattern that I'm using to create my own pain. And I can't step into the window that would show me a clear, open pathway to the truth of my life.
I'm in the last week of the eight questions or eight comments or statements of chapter 21, and one of my big challenges is if I'm in a negative state, it's bad, and I'm guilty of being wrong and out of line. And so the Way of Master has been a wonderful help for me. It's very simple languaging. And also, I enjoy your interpretations or your comments, offering alternatives for a particular word, because very often the words are, the words are in traditional Christian languaging, and I'm okay with that. And I also get reactive to that in some situations. So that's been very helpful. And this last statement in chapter 21, which is, it is impossible, and I put for me, it is impossible for me to be guilty of sin, has been very, very helpful. And I'm writing that down. I did not feel led to sit and wait for something to come up when I wrote the questions out. And very often I would just write the question out and find myself continuing to write something in addition to it, something that gave me comfort because I could feel the discomfort, and then I just filled in what I was understanding in this moment of time feeling in this moment of time about the Way of Mastery, how the Way of Mastery would elaborate on that. And I just write until I'm finished. And also, every week I have written that week's statement, but I've also written all of the previous week's statements. So I have a sense of continuity, plus the last two statements of, this is the truth about me, and I only want this truth with a capital T, and I am free in this moment of time to choose to see things differently, and sometimes they say anew and differently. And that's just like the little caption or the little closure at the end of all the preceding sentences. So it's been taking me quite a while, and I'm in the final week, and that has been a very helpful practice for me because I have memorized the sentences. And if I wake up in the middle of the night, I can repeat them and just gently repeat my poem or whatever. And if I don't go back to sleep, that's cool. I'll just use it for meditation or for looking, observing what's going on for me. And it works.
Well, that's good. It's essentially, what you're talking about there is the very same tool as Dr. Michael Rice's Mind Shifter tool. And it's probably a wonderful little synchronicity that this Way of Mastery has the very same process as a recommendation to stir up what needs to be seen and released, what's less than loving, what's inaccurate in our perception. It's the very same process that Michael Rice uses in the Mind Shifter tool. And instead of a sheet of 39 statements broken into three categories of 13 each, this just simply gives 9 statements. And rather than writing on them for an hour, this recommends you spend a week on each one, pulling it out as often as you're called to do so, and looking at the statement at the top of the page and seeing what wants to argue against this statement. And we've done various things with it over the years. Dr. Michael Rice likes to talk about regulatory speech and the benefit of stating things in the positive. So we've gone through those and rewritten them in positive terms. And you can do it either way. You can, you know, it's not possible for me to be guilty of sin is one of them, and it's not possible for me to be alone or without love. And so we've rewritten those and positively stating, I am always in the energy of love. I am the energy of love. I'm always in the energy of love, etc. But just to clarify for people what you're referring to, that's, as you said, at the beginning of lesson 21 in the first page. So there are a number of tools. I'm glad you're finding them useful. Is there anything else you wanted to add to this call?
Yes, just one more thing. I wanted to share a poem with you because you had asked, said that you always like poems. That's how what I heard you to be saying, that are uplifting. This poem is anonymous, as an anonymous writer, and it was written during the period of time in the early 90s when the Soviet Union was falling apart. It's from Siberia. And I happened to come across it on the internet for some way or another. I have not been able to locate it ever since. I had the presence of mind to write it down at the time and put it on one of my documents. It's called The Presence of the Light. This is the context, then, is everything has fallen apart. You know, everything is in chaos at this time. The presence of the light. We are not saints. We are not heroes. Our lives are lived in the quiet corners of the ordinary. We build our tiny hearth fires, sometimes barely strong enough to give off warmth. But to the person lost in the darkness, our tiny flame may be the road to safety, the path to salvation. It is not given to us to know who is lost in the darkness that surrounds us. Or even if our light is seen, we can only know that against even the smallest of lights, darkness cannot land. Oh, I'm sorry. We can only know that against even the smallest of lights, darkness cannot stand. A sailor lost at sea can be guided home by a single candle. A person lost in the woods can be led to safety by a flickering flame.
Lovely.
Yeah, I thought so.
Well, I thank you for that. I thank you for your comments, as always, and the poem. And I look forward to the next time you call in and we get to chat.
Thank you.
All right, blessings. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Have a lovely weekend, and welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I hope you have a good weekend, too.
All right, blessings.
So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Friday, November the 11th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we'll give Michael a moment to dial in, and I'll just invite everybody to go to the website, whyagain.org, and click on, you know, I usually tell people click on the Start Here button, but an easier way, right on the front page when it first opens up, there's six big buttons right in the middle of the page before you do any scrolling or anything. And there's the Why Book, the Mindshifters Radio, and the Wake Up Sheets. Right below the Wake Up Sheets, it says Other Worksheets, all the rest of the tools. So those buttons take you directly there, then the shopping for the DVDs, CDs, books, and then the videos, the streaming that we have. So those big buttons are right there as soon as you sign on to the website, and that's the easiest way to link into all of those. And up in the top right corner, they're really small buttons, so you might miss them, but it's right next to the magnifying glass, the little search button. You'll find the little square icon that has an F in it, and that takes you to the Facebook page. The V in a little square takes you to the Vimeo page. The next one is like a little arrow in a box, and that is for YouTube. And then the next button is iHeartRadio, the podcast. So that if you click on one of those, it takes you directly there. So there's a lot of things on the website that you may overlook, or they've been there so long that, you know, people don't pay attention to them or whatever. So we invite you to click on things and scroll around and see what you can find. And Michael has now joined us, so I'm going to say welcome, Michael. Hello, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. And welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here as we move forward in this sweet conversation about forgiveness. And Jeannie, I'm sure we'll chime in here, share a little bit more. Yesterday we had some interesting conversations, at least for us, on ARIA, on raising little ones and on these awesome beings. And you might remember, it's a couple of weeks ago, I guess, I shared that, or Jeannie and I shared that we were taking her home, and has this little imaginary character. She actually got it from a TV show, and it, you know, she uses her hand like a mouth, and it's this character talking. And we shared a couple of weeks ago that, you know, there are certain toys that stay here and certain toys that go home with her when she goes to her mom and dad's. And she has a dollhouse here and a couple of beds for her dolls, that sort of thing. And she asked me as we were going out to the car to take her home if she could take one of these doll beds with her. I said, well, let's leave it here because, you know, you have your toys here and then you have your toys at mom and dad's. She said, oh, I just want to take it in the car. She's like, okay. And a couple times that afternoon, we had invited her to lay down and take a nap because it was obvious she was tired. Now, there's certain signs that, you know, you can tell when a little one is tired. And she said she wanted to take this bed with her. And we get in the car. And she's got the bed on her lap. And again, you know, several times either Jeannie or I had said, you know, you look like you're really tired. Oh, I'm not tired. I'm just fine. You know, she doesn't want to miss anything. So all of a sudden, what's her character's name, Jeannie?
Sean.
All of a sudden, Sean starts talking and tells Jeannie and I, or asks Jeannie and I, would you guys be quiet? I'm tired. And she, you know, she's mouthing
no,
this with
no,
her
not,
fingers
and not,
her thumb.
No,
not
Sean there. Is.
No, Sean. Yeah, Sean is tired. Would you be, you know, be quiet because Sean wants to rest, and she's got this little wooden bed on her lap, and so she takes her hand, you know, Sean, and lays it down and gets some quiet time. Well, roll forward to yesterday. She's taking a bath, and one of the toys we got is a little basketball hoop, and you know, with a small basketball that she can play with in the bathtub. So she's doing that. And Sean misses the ball. You know, he takes a shot. And it just, I could just watch. It was a really powerful unfolding to see how she used her projection on this character to talk to herself. And what was the audio track, Jeannie, about 5 or 6 minutes? You muted, sweetie. You muted Jeannie.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
There you go, you're back.
Yeah, it was close to 6 minutes, and it was just the audio track. Of course, I wasn't videoing her. She was taking a bath, but she's actually spent the last 2 nights with us, so we've had her, you know, for 48 hours, but she just was amazing last night giving Sean advice.
Well, it's interesting, you know, putting it together with the projection of she was tired, but she wouldn't admit it, but all of a sudden she wants us to be quiet so Sean can rest. And then watching her last night when she missed a shot using this Sean character in her hand, and she went on, what were some of the words that she used? Oh, one of them, she asked Jeannie, or she told Jeannie that Sean was a figment. And then she said, do you know what Arya says to Jeannie, do you know what that means? And she says, well, yes. And she said, yeah, it means he doesn't really exist, but we pretend he does. Her words to that effect. So she knows this character is a figment of her imagination. But when this character fails at performing this task, I mean, she spent 5 or 6 minutes consoling him, encouraging him, supporting him, and inviting him to go ahead. You can do it. You can do it. It's okay. It doesn't matter if you miss.
You must persevere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she said you must. She's 4. You must persevere. So it was interesting to hear her in her speech, and we've talked over the years a lot about regulatory speech. It was interesting to hear the regulatory speech that she was using as she was encouraging Sean, this figment of her imagination, as she identified, to practice coaching herself and supporting herself. And, I mean, her regulatory speech was awesome to hear her, you know, conversing with this character and supporting him. It was just, I mean, it was awesome. It was beautiful, actually, to listen to how she spoke to him and the level at which she spoke. What do you think, Jeannie?
Yeah, she would say, Sean, I know that you're sad, and it doesn't feel good to be sad. And, you know, this is, and she turned and looked at us and said, I'm going to do a fake sad face just so he can see what it looks like. And then she turns back to her hand and makes this sad face. And she said, but you can be happy. You know, you can feel better. And Michael was telling her, you know, tell Sean to cancel his goal. And she said, you've got to persevere, but just do your very best. And we're here to cheer for you. And I mean, just, you know, I know that you feel bad. You know, her hand was sitting over in the soap, this thing on the side of the bathtub, and was like kind of bent over, like, you know, it was in a sad posture. And she'd reach up and grab her other thumb and bring it down, you know, like she was holding Sean's hand. And she's like, I'm here to help you. And just going on and on. And she used the word persevere, I don't know how many times. I mean, it was just amazing.
But what struck me most of all was she knows it's a projection. I mean, she doesn't understand, we're teaching her what projection is, but she knows that it's not real. And if only adults who project, you know, my anger's about you know, all of those sorts of things, if only adults understood at that level that their upsets and their turmoils, the resources are within them to work through them. And it was just awesome to watch her. And she just, you know, did this all on her own. There was no conversation with us. It was just, and so pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. So let's check in and say hello to everybody and just see if anybody's out there in listener land that has a thought or a question for us or anything we can support them with. Got anybody
well,
in the phone queue with a hand up?
She doesn't have her hand up, but I see Celinda on the switchboard, so I'm going to push 1. I know she talked to Dr. Tim a little bit, but maybe she wants to still talk to us. Welcome, Celinda.
Of course. I always like to talk to you.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome. My apologies for the other day not getting to get you on. The switchboard was kind of confusing, and I'm not that expert at it, so my apology.
No worries, Michael, because I did not feel any vibes in any way that would have required apology coming from either my projections or from your sense of wanting to extend your love and caring. I appreciate very much your little story about Aria Rain. I feel like I'm being re-parented just by listening to your stories of your interactions with Aria. Thank you so much for that.
Actually, that's a good way of saying it. It was like she was re-parenting the parts of herself that feel some form of inadequacy. It was just like, wow.
Well, and, you know, we had shared yesterday how, you know, she had gotten upset thinking, you know, that she was going to have to leave the school that she's in when I read her the little note about letting the parents needing to let the school know if she was going to move into kindergarten from pre-kindergarten. Well, this morning we pulled up into the school. You know, I took her to school and I pulled up in the line and we were sitting there waiting. And she said, "Nene, when I go to kindergarten, will you still hold me?" And I thought I was going to flip. And I said, "Honey, I will."
"I'll hold you when you're 75 years old."
I said, "I'll hold you when you're bigger than me."
Do you ever feel like you're
as the tears flow?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever feel like you're being reparented?
Oh, yeah. But after two nights of getting up three times in the middle of the night and then ending up sleeping in her bed, I know why we have babies young. It's like, oh my gosh. But yeah,
deja vu,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I think Ryan was about four before he ever slept through the night, and so here we go again.
My daughter was like that. My first boy was like that. She was very colicky, and I was exhausted all the time. I remember one story for sure, which I was trying to get her to go to sleep, and I would rock her for hours, and then she would wake up the minute I would stop rocking and start crying again. And, of course, at that time I had no tools. I had no way of sorting through what was going on, and I would put her in her little crib, and I would pat her back for her, and she would be in kind of a little froggy position. And this one night, I was so tired, must have been about midnight or something, and I was patting her, and I was patting her, and all of a sudden I realized I was not patting her, I was hitting her, and I just walked out of the house, because I had to walk out of the house to collect myself, to go back and be able to nurture her. And it was a real eye-opener for me. I was like, whoa. And so I'll share that for any other young mothers out there. It's not about being
one of
guilty.
One of the things that happens when we go into that level of fatigue is the veil, you know, they call the veil of the temple, the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious, opens wider, and it's harder to restrict or, refuse to follow those energetic patterns. So what an awesome catch for you to have caught and become aware of that kind of energy and to heal it right there on the spot. That's amazing.
Well, I wish I could say I would have healed all of those situations, but it was like I scared myself to death is what happened in that thing at that time. And it took me a long time. It's been a long journey.
Well, we're glad you've still chosen to be alive.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than doing that death thing you were talking about.
Always, Michael. It's like the unending journey. It's just like there's always more. And I really listen to spirit as much as I can. And then when I get into a glitch, a communication glitch or a relational glitch, especially with Larry, it's like I'm growing because he is my teacher. And there's a lot of resistance there. He keeps coming back and telling me in different ways, and then we find a way to make it work for both of us, and we say, well, let's try this, it might work this way, and we see changes in each other, and there's still more room for growth.
Well, when you realize that you're probably an early adapter, perhaps first one in your bloodline in who knows how many thousands of years to realize to be done and to step out of, you know, that one world religion of blame and step into responsibility and cleaning up the internal process. It's rare. And so when you do that, you take on a giant piece of work. And even, you know, when we're in our quote unquote normal state, we say, yeah, I'm really willing to do this. When that resistor comes up inside, remembering that in Aramaic, the word Satan means the resistor, one who misleads, you just, you know, when you're in your normal awake state and you see how crazy your own mind can be, and you go, wow, I'm never going to do that again. But when it comes up, when it's resonated, that resistor takes over and runs the show until the next time, you know, you do your work and you get that thing quiet enough to go, oh, my God, look what I've done. And you work through layer by layer. So it's definitely an internal process. When Paul spoke about we see as though through a glass darkly, the word that the Greeks translated that word darkly with was enigma, something that's confusing and difficult to figure out, difficult to understand. And that's exactly what the mind is, and the way that it projects, the way perception works, until that's understood, is such a challenge.
In the way of mastery, there are a couple of early references to the devil. And one of the references to the devil is when we learn to dance or the jig with the devil. And how I understood that was, you know, we keep dancing this unconscious jig with the devil, doing the devil's dance. And what happens is one day, and the timing is always unique to the individual, one day we're doing this dance, Michael, and we just go, oh, my God, this is what this is all about. I don't think I like this jig. And that's the wake-up time. I am going to start doing something different. And then the real work happens, right? The practice, the deprogramming and the reprogramming. And we're not going to do it overnight, usually. It's rarely is it a one-time hit with a behavior that we've done for how, I don't know how young you and Jeannie are, but 7, 8 years? My goodness. This is generational stuff, like you say so often.
Yeah, I would probably delete the word rarely and say never. Never. And if we do have one piece that we do this piece of work and it changes.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Would you repeat what I just said so I can put rarely in that context and know what
you're
referencing?
Oh, you said rarely is it a one-time. Rarely is it a one-time thing.
Oh, good.
And my offering is never.
Yeah, it gives me even more hope, Michael.
And if there's a piece of work that we do that seems like it's a one-time shot, really look back and you'll see how many times you've worked on an issue in order to free yourself of it. And I think that's what led Yeshua, and they said, is 7 worksheets enough? He said, no, 77 times 70. You know, there's an infinite amount of work to be done when you recognize these are generational patterns in order to bring about a shift in the game.
And I'm also becoming aware, on deeper and deeper levels, it's just like you just go into deeper and deeper mysteries. It's like I had a friend who once said to me a long, long time ago, I must really be a slow learner. And I said, because I'm just learning this now, whatever it was. And I said, have you ever thought that you might be a fast learner, that maybe this is your first life? And she just looked at me. I don't even know where that came from, Michael. I mean, I was an evangelical Christian. Wait, what is that? But it just came out of my mouth. And it was like great consolation for me, too, at the same time. This was really amazing, and that was 50 years ago or more. But now I'm beginning to comprehend, what does it mean to be a co-creator? There's no way that I I'm not part of whatever shows up in my life, for good or ill.
Well, I hear you loud and clear, and it's certainly the process to be entered into, and it always amazes me, or I guess it's more and more I'm seeing how long it takes for people to really enter the conversation and have some, like that the ego mind, that non-being mind, is so inertia-bound and so massive. It's such a huge mass of data, and it's going to do the best it can to just keep going wherever it has been going, and to change that is something else.
Well, we've given it life, haven't we? And all things that feel they have life are going to try to preserve it. The ego I'm talking about now. We,
yes,
in our creation,
right. Yeah.
Have given it life. Yeah, it's awesome.
It's an amazing and a fun process, isn't it?
Yes, and sometimes it's sometimes it's scary, and then I know I have to go within. I don't have to do anything. I can go within and do something about it. But it's just this first responder thing. I felt like I've been marching to a different drummer all my life. And so I said, oh, maybe I'm just a first responder.
Well, and it might be helpful to just look at when my mind automatically comes up with a speech of, it is scary.
Uh-huh.
To be able to shift that from that denial, as though something outside of you could possibly cause fear in you, to I have fear come up in the presence of those opportunities. When I do that, I can come more directly in contact with that energetic pattern of fear, and that's how I get to move through it.
Yeah, really. And also listening, you know. I've had people say, well, you're a really good listener. And I say, well, I think that's contextual. If I'm not triggered, I can be a good listener sometimes. But I'm amazed at the depth of what it means to be a good listener, even. Like, you know,
recognizing that listening is also an energetic process that, you know, when listening doesn't occur, when someone repeatedly attempts to shut someone down, there's no outlet for that energy, and that energy will tend to build because the listening is not there to diffuse the energy. You know, someone who refuses, no, I'm not, don't make me look there, and, you know, comes up with all the threats and all the ways they try to shut, you know, like push that energy back in someone's mouth, as opposed to, oh, well, let me just get into a space here where I can receive this or I can hear this. And usually the thing that people want to push down somebody else's throat is the very thing that they themselves need to hear. But the resistance to doing it is, you know, all kinds of threats that people come up with just to shut other people up. And, don't make me look is the message that goes with it. And the very thing that we all need to do is to look at those places in our own minds that hold that kind of resistance, because that's where the healing is.
Yeah, and if we're unwilling to look at our stuff, how can we look at another person's stuff in calmness with attention and affection?
Well, that's why 99.999% of its projection. We're not listening to anybody else's stuff at all. It's all filtered through the content of one's own mind and projection.
And we're not listening to ourselves either.
Sweet. Well, yeah. Was there a question or something for you the other day when I wasn't able to get you on?
That was about
anything
Magda.
To share?
I was thinking that possibly she was listening and then had gone called away and forgot to mute her phone. That's why I'm constantly muting my phone now if I'm not talking, because I could do that just on a heartbeat if Larry comes in and asks me a question, and then we have this conversation. And meanwhile, you're saying, hey, wait, just not on mute. Yeah. Trying to be more responsible in the sense of being more awake.
Well, I loved the conversation with Magda the other day, and it was really sweet to see her impact on Michael and how she was the vehicle for opening things up for him. It was awesome.
For Michael? Oh, for the gentleman that's caretaking your Heartland Center?
Right, it said Heartland. Right, yeah.
Okay. Well, carry on, dear one.
Cool. All right, young lady.
And you too, Jeannie. Okay. Bye-bye.
Lots of love and blessings. All right, take care. Bye-bye.
And we have a hand up, and I believe it is Miss Susan. How are you feeling, young lady? 610, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. Much better.
Oh, good.
I wanted Jeannie, the picture of your dad when he was young in Facebook is just adorable. And it's so good to see the old person as a young person. At hospice, when we were volunteering there, we always made sure the patient had a picture of his or her more vital younger self up by the headboard. So it was easier to relate to them as a person with all the faculties. It's a horrible thing to say, but we tend to think that maybe they're not all there, or, you know, it just helped us see the person as their best, whole, healthy self, and made relating much easier. So it's
absolutely
great to see your dad up there, and the stories about Aria are gorgeous.
She asked me yesterday, you know, because she knew that dad was here at this house, you know, for the first 3 years of her life. And she said, "Do you miss your dad?" And I said, "Are you talking about G-Pop?" And she goes, "Yeah." And I said, "Yeah." I said, "I wish he were here." I said, "But where he's at, they're taking care of him." And she goes, "Yeah, and you can go visit." And I said, "Yeah, we do." So, you know, she's just amazing. I mean.
In terms of
I'm getting a call from my heart doctor. I'm going to get off and come back.
Go for it.
Okay.
Come on
back
if it works. All right. Hold the space.
Yeah. And you were doing Darth Vader breathing, Michael. That's why I muted you.
I like to breathe.
Yeah. You breathe loud, and then I can't hear the person talking.
Okay.
Anyway.
I just wanted to, with that mention of your dad's picture, I just wanted to bring up the whole issue of it being Remembrance Day and remembering those who have given their all in this insane process of war, and those who have put themselves in harm's way. I have a friend, and I thought this was really quite sweet, and it was a beautiful picture. A friend who posted on Facebook a picture of his father, and it was painted, beautifully painted, on a piece of tent canvas. And he told the story of how he found this one day kind of in the attic, this picture, this rolled up piece of tent canvas, and it's his dad's picture, and it's like just, I mean, really starkly beautiful picture, so beautifully painted. And so his dad, you know, was alive, and he took it to him. He said, "Dad, what is this? Why is this in the attic?" And his dad unfolded the story that in World War II, he was in charge of a prisoner, or not in charge of the camp, but he was working, he was a guard in a prisoner of war camp of German prisoners. And after a certain amount of time, one of the prisoners came to him and said that he would like to give him a gift. He had heard, you know, the propaganda was how terrible the Americans were and what terrible things they would do if you ever got captured. And his father was a person of integrity and really took care of these prisoners. And it's bringing a lot of emotion up for me. Anyway, he wanted to paint a picture of him as a gift, his German soldier. And the only thing they had to do, they cut a piece of tent canvas, and it was his way of honoring this man who was his captor, but treated him as a human being. And it, to me, brings the message forward of what we need in our world is more human life. We need more people who function with integrity and as the presence of love rather than this hate and fear and vile, vicious tongue that runs so many minds, the rage, the pain, the trauma, the abuse. And so, you know, one of our objectives with these tools is to open space for the healing of those dynamics in every mind, heart, and being on the planet so that we can each come to realize who we really truly are as human beings. And those who have given their lives in war, we hold the space. I know that back several years ago, many of you remember David Hayes, who was at Heartland for several years, and we did, he's a vet, and we did a show with him, and he was talking about some of his experiences in war. And one of the things that he shared, and a question came up, was what was most difficult for you about all of that? And he kind of broke down a little bit, and it was the act of killing another man, how difficult that was, how, you know, just it confronted. He had been raised Catholic, and it just confronted everything that he'd been taught to believe, but was told it was something he needed to do. And the kind of pain that men carry home, you know, we live right now, we know that even with partial accounting that about 25 vets a day are killing themselves in America. And the kind of things that go on, I remember one young man who came to Heartland, and he had been in Vietnam, and his trauma, his pain was just enormous. And he too had been raised Catholic, and in what, you know, after a significant amount of work, he was actually on the support team for a time period, and some of you may remember Fran. He was on the support team, and I'm not telling stories out of school. It's something he, you know, opened the space to share. But the painful experience that he had was that the first man that he killed, he ended up through a series of circumstances with the man's wallet. And in this man's wallet, and this was just like, just beyond comprehensible for him and the trauma of it, he had refused to be drafted. And his mother and his father told him that he had to answer that call. And he finally had been, as I say, been raised Catholic. He went to his priest with this, you know, I don't want to do this. And his priest told him that he had to answer that call. So he did. And in the wallet of the man that was his first kill was his membership card. And you want to talk about a repressed trauma, something that's held just, you know, like beyond comprehensible. But it was a major, major healing for him to be able to look at that issue from, and you know, this was, let's see, from Vietnam back in the 70s. This was back in the first 5 or so years at Heartland, so that would have been back in probably 92 or 93. So a lot of years between Vietnam and 92, 93 when he went through that. And what a load to carry around. And why are there 25 plus vets committing suicide every day in America? That's why. You can't carry that kind of trauma, and you know, without tools, it's just more of a load than anybody can carry. So if you have any vets in your life that are carrying that load, share the tools with them, share forgiveness with them, share the commitment with them. And create a space that's safe for them to look at the things that they have been forced to do. Another young man I worked with way back, this is in the earliest days of this work, this is probably maybe 1970. I was actually doing a workshop in Buffalo, New York, and ended up working with a vet who, you know, drugs became, you know, the order of the day over there. I think that was part of the way of undermining the American military was with the drugs. And this man was on guard duty at night. He was all drugged up. And an incoming enemy plane, and he shot it down. Well, when they got to the plane, it wasn't an incoming enemy plane. It was his own, you know, troop. He killed a whole plane load of his own men. And his superior officer, whatever it was, of course I put a question mark before the word superior, forced him to clean up the bodies. And that's what he was walking around Buffalo, New York with. So the kinds of things that if we wake up that we can bring to healing for these men, for these women. If we do our own work, we're each empowered. You know, this isn't a body of work that's reserved for somebody with a PhD or some high and mighty somebody. It's a body of work that's designed for any person who chooses to, with integrity, support other people in healing, to take the tools and put them to work, use them. And, of course, we're here to support anyone who's ready to do that. Jeannie, did you have a thought, sweetie?
No, Susan's back on with her hand up.
Okay. Well, let's go back to the young lady and say hello again.
Okay, she's on.
Is your heart doctor
you
okay?
Actually, it was my regular family doctor, and I'm glad he called right then because I have a question for you. I wasn't going to talk about meds, but I'm on ivermectin and hydrochloroquine and vitamin D and some other things recommended by my wonderful MD/functional medicine doctor. And
right.
My doctor just said, well, can I prescribe, some other drugs that the regular people recommend, Paxlovid
right.
or something like that. Do you know about it, Michael?
You know, I can't put that in the arena of knowledge. I've looked at some of the information on it, and it hasn't been very complimentary.
Well, that's the thing.
But I don't know.
I wasn't going to tell him. I was just going to tell him I'm much better, no fever, energy coming back. I got a lot of junk I'm getting rid of. But I told him, of course, I said, I would take, he said, it's great for long COVID. It might help you. And I said, well, I'm already on stuff that you probably don't like the idea of. I'm a fence sitter. I listen to everybody, and I just do what I think is the best. And he said, oh, those things, no. I mean, here you're taking them. Okay, well, but I'm not going to recommend this drug for you because they do interact, and you shouldn't be on that if you're on that stuff. He was okay. I think he was a little PO'd, but I'm telling you, Michael, it's a tricky world out there, knowing which things to take.
Michael, I think you're talking, but you're muted.
Excuse me, I was muted. My apology. But, yeah, I agree with you 100%. And there's so much information out there, and to sort through it, you know, is this coming from the conspiracy crowd, you know, or is this factual? It's definitely a challenge to put it all together, and it sounds like, you know, this is what, your third day, and you're coming up the other side and your fever's gone. I'd say you're on the right track.
I feel that way, but what's weird is he thinks of hydrochloroquine and ivermectin as part of the conspiracy crowd's rhetoric. You know,
yes.
I've gone over to the other side. So I'm telling you, at least I was, thank God I told him the truth, and, you know, and he'll continue to see me. But it did take him since Wednesday to get back to me, whereas my other doctor was right on the phone with me immediately. And that's also means a lot to me. And she had had COVID twice. She was not vaccinated. She had had Lyme disease and felt the vaccination might mess with the protocols she's living with. She's very careful about her health. She's brilliant. She didn't get the vaccination. And I appreciate that. She made a very considered personal choice. It wasn't one of those conspiracy theory hysterical things. It was careful. I value her opinion very much on things. Anyway, it's just a confusing world, and I guess we just have to sit with ourselves and think which one feels right, and I could be so wrong, you know. So anyway, but I have a question for you about all this.
Yes.
First of all, I'm getting no night sweats at all. I was looking forward to ending up soaked to the skin, but nothing like that is happening. I am using the Avacyn, but what I've noticed is it seems as if all of the worries I had about the grand boys, all of the pain I was feeling, knock on wood, they've left. They've just left. It isn't though I've forgotten about the boys at all, but is it because a bug just gives you permission to let go of everything and rest for a while? And if I get better, am I going to get all my sins back on my shoulders? I might stay sick.
Of course, you can create anything you want in the future. My take, once again, is that nobody's ever died of COVID or any other viral infection. And, you know, in much of the medical world, they talk about killing a virus. You can't kill something that isn't alive. You know, viruses can't reproduce. They're just not life. They're packets of data. And my take is that if one of those stray packets of data gets into your structure and there are resonating energies in your structure, that's where they latch on. And it's, you know, I think there are viral packets of information that are positive and uplifting. And, you know, a lot of our evolution as human beings has been based in viruses. And a lot of death has been based in viruses, but it's not the virus itself. It's that the virus, my take is, it resonates down to the core of the disintegrative or death-producing energies that are in your structure. If you step out and process them rather than you know, resist it, fight it, and, you know, this growing disintegrative energy, I mean, it kills people. Now, as to the thing of, well, this seems to have left, is it going to come back? Well, I from experience, you know, from our recent experience, my two offerings would be, you know, I have had a wheeze in my lungs all my life. According to the protocol of dying via COVID, I should be dead from having had it. And as I told you, my lungs went through a healing process, and I haven't wheezed since I completed that COVID experience. Something has been in my lungs all my life, so it has not returned. Now, Jeannie, she had this pain in her neck, which had been going on for a couple of years, and the third or fourth day, that pain was gone. I mean, she had been, it was so severe that she was literally wearing a collar around her neck, a TENS unit for electrical stimulation, to ameliorate the pain, and it was gone. Now, in her case, that has not completed. She still had layers of that moving since then. I've had a little bit of lung congestion off and on since then, but the wheezing that's been with me all my life is gone. And, you know, I'm knock on wood, I'll, you know, click on the top of my head that, you know, it's a permanent fix. It's a permanent healing. And I believe
Wonderful.
It is. And it isn't necessarily so. you know, there are perhaps more layers to work through. But I think that if, you know, it's like if you think about somebody who's got a bacterial infection, they send a poison in to kill the bacteria, and, you know, 95% of the bacteria are killed. The other 5% turn into superbugs. They can't kill them with that drug.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we are in a space where we're willing to process, you know, I would feel very safe in saying that if you think of your grandsons, I suspect there's still a great deal of compassion and caring and, you know, holding a space of love for them. You've just freed yourself of the trauma that was resonating in you. And that may be your gift from COVID. For me, it was the gift of this lung clearing. For Jeannie, it was the
wow.
neck process that you went through. I actually had COVID twice. The second time that I got it, the main shift that I felt, I've had a challenge for about 10 years, especially in my right foot. And the second or third day of that, there was a major movement of energy through my foot, and that foot has changed since then. So, and, you know, I'm assuming that one's cleared because there's been none of that happening since I had that second round of COVID. But I think if I'm willing to process, if we're willing to process what's there, then the virus comes in to resonate that and gives us the opportunity. I know that some of the people that I've worked with over the couple of years that COVID's been around, one person in particular, I mean, he went into such a dark place. And this is someone that I spoke to regularly, but he went into such a dark place, he would hardly even talk to me. There was so much of his old trauma up in his face. Mm. And, you know, he shared with me at one point, he thought he was going to kill himself over it. It was that intense.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the willingness to embrace and process and move through the energy, and, you know, that may be the completion of that energetic process for you. And if so, that'll be the
gift
that COVID gives you.
Michael, when you got COVID the first and second time, do you remember that you were working on or feeling issues up in your face when you got sick? Because this time before I got sick was about, I was just hanging on by my toenails not to go under. And I was doing the worksheets, but I was tired and, you know, depression and anxiety, a lot of stuff was right up there. And then I got sick. And I was wondering if you had that, was stuff up for you, and then you got sick, and the sickness helped you clear yourself?
Well, my take is, if we're in cooperation with the energy that's moving, it's not sickness, it's symptoms.
Okay.
I become symptomatic, and, you know, I'm doing the right thing. So I recognize I'm in a healing crisis. I'm in a space of willingness to embrace and move this energy. Then it's not really sickness at all. It's symptomatic. And unfortunately, you know, the medical profession doesn't tend to differentiate between those two. But I think there's a monstrous difference between them. In one case, I'm in a process of embracing and accessing and moving through what I need to move through. And, yeah, it's not Dr. Feelgood. And all the symptoms of my life that have gone along with that are here, they're in my face, but I'm in the process of removal. So we're talking now about, you know, a physical and emotional form of forgiveness, really. It's the removal of what never belonged. And, of course, on the way out, it's going to look like it did on the way in, so now we've got symptoms. Is it sickness or healing? Well, it depends which way the energy is going. If I'm in that vitality, in that willingness, embracing, and I keep moving and doing the right things, and I've got the support that I need, then my seeming symptoms are going to be healing, not sickness.
Oh, that's a lovely thought. That's great.
So breathing with you.
Nice.
And standing with you in willingness for anything and everything that needs to surface. I mean, you know, I've watched very closely. When I say very closely, I'm talking about Jeannie, myself, and actually Dad as well. Because, I mean, up until he had COVID, his knee for 4 years has been his nemesis. It was always his complaint.
Yeah.
It was always his irritation. It was always pain, his knee and his feet. And he hasn't had a complaint since he got out of the hospital. We, you know, he had some edema about the first 2 weeks. We worked on his feet. We used the Avacin, and his edema is gone. He is off of Lasix, and he's been, you know, mostly laying in a hospital bed or on a in his recliner chair or on a wheelchair, and he has had zero edema in his feet and not one word of complaint about his feet or his knee. So I think that was the gift he got from COVID when he got it. Now, unfortunately, you know, he was left, as far as we can tell, for 11 days in a hospital bed, and they didn't get him up. And at 90, and you've already got challenges moving, you don't walk again. So he's not walking, and it doesn't look like he probably will again.
Wow.
But he's not going through that pain in his feet that, I mean, he would sit and he'd be grimacing and, you know, moving his feet and his legs around. Zero. That's gone. It's like gone. Yeah. And we've been watching him do that in various stages for the 4 years that we've been here.
Wow.
Any thoughts for you on that, Jeannie?
Well, one of the things that I really had to work on, especially the first time that we had COVID back in December, was I did a lot of work around the fear of dying. You know, it was like in 2020 especially, and then into 2021, it seemed like so many people that, you know, we knew got COVID and died. And so then when we got it, it was like, you know, okay, is this going to be the end of it? And so working through fear was one of the things that I personally had to address. And facing that and, you know, just coming out the other side, letting that go, because it would be actually the fear that would take me out, not the COVID.
Wow.
It was totally different the second time around. The high fever brought up fear for me again. But that passed pretty quickly after I started doing the ivermectin. And I also did an antibiotic.
Erythromycin. Erythromycin.
And, another thing that will help, when you were talking about coughing stuff up, if you have a nebulizer, you know, that you can put either colloidal silver or food-grade hydrogen peroxide in or something and breathe it, that'll also help get in your lungs and relieve some of that mucus buildup.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a nebulizer, get a humidifier to put that up, out into the air.
My woman that gave me the ivermectin suggested a neti pot and gargling with Himalayan salt hot water. I've been doing
that.
That
would work.
But everything is just loosening up. It's so, I can understand that fear, Jeannie, and I have a terrible fear of death, but this was just the happiest time. I popped myself into bed and I thought, yippee, I'm off the hook from everything. And I've had a wonderful 3 days, even though I didn't feel physically
good.
Know what happened.
I love it.
I don't know what that was.
Well, it sounds
about,
like a burden. You know,
yeah.
What I think of as you're saying that is that story of the woman with the 12-year issue of blood and Yeshua. You know, she knows she needs to touch the hem of his garment. And Yeshua says, you know, at least the way the Greeks translate, I don't have the Aramaic for that, but the Greeks say, you know, I feel as though virtue has left me.
Wow.
And what I would believe, and again, I don't have this based on translation, but what I believe he was saying is that I've had an energy shift. There's been some energy that has dissipated from my field. This woman knew she needed that energy, utilized it for her healing, and goes through this major healing crisis like in an instant. And, you know, the rest of the throng isn't touched, but she sure is. And so... it's not that, you know, there was something, virtue has gone. That was, you know, the level of understanding of the Greeks for it, but it was just that there's been a dip in my energy as she picked up some of that energy and had support for it. And so it sounds like you were ready for that. And again, he put it in her court. It wasn't that he did it. It was your willingness to open and do your work. But, and that's
well, I hope
the whole idea of this work.
I hope you didn't feel any diminution of your energy, because
not in the least.
Good.
Not in the least.
Good. This is where I think I've been getting the help. Still haven't finished the long power person thing. That is just a daunting thing. And you wanted me to do it on JD, Catherine's former husband.
Right.
And I wonder if that's the right person, because I'm just running into, you know, not knowing how to answer things. My relationship with him was so limited. It was limited to a sincere kindness toward him, wishing him well, both in my mind and in my life, but a total masking of all my edges. I pulled them in. I became a generic, helpful mother-in-law, and I don't think he knew who I was, and he only went from gone to angry with me. So, anyway, I've meant
well,
to talk to you
what
about
it. Yeah, what I would do with that then is I'd do as much of that worksheet as I can with him, and then take a look at your answers and see how they relate to who you perceive your main power person was. And it sounds like from what you've said, it was mom. And it might not have been mom, but, you know, Jeannie used to think it was her mom because there was a lot of conflict in her childhood with mom. But then one day she was doing some codependence work and realized that, you know, based on, you know, the knowledge that the way I tell who my key power person is when I'm ultra stressed is I have to look at the behaviors that I do. And what Jeannie realized was that the behavior she did was her dad. It wasn't her mom.
That is so
interesting. And so, of course, we have different power persons.
Wow.
So you might just look at whatever comes out of that, whatever you can fill in it, and then just see if it matches anything with power person, with your, you know, your earlier life power person.
Okay, good idea.
What I was really suggesting you do with him, or at least what comes to mind at this moment, is that you do the power person worksheet as him. Be him and do the worksheet as though you were him.
Wow, that's very different.
Okay. See what processes. And see what insight you get, and it'll probably open, you know, a great deal of compassion with him. And if you open compassion with him, it will be your healing that comes when you can extend that energy to him on another level, which means that a whole other level of your physiology, your nervous system, your mind energy will be cleaned up, and that will open still a different space in relationship to the boys. And empowering, in terms of empowering you to be the space for them.
Michael,
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I need to go down a layer, though, because I have felt compassion for him. I really see him as suffering under an illness, a mental illness that's not his fault. I see him as innocent. And I've done that for a long time, but I had a fear of him. I stayed away from him. Just for self-preservation, but it wasn't that I was angry at him or hated him or anything.
So my offering would be that you never feared him, but in his presence, your fear would come up.
No kidding.
And
yeah,
so
point
he was the catalyst for healing a fear that was already within you.
Right. That is true. That is so true. Yeah.
So allowing the next layer of fear to come up and be processed out, forgiven, would be powerful.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably some of the energy that was going on with the boys. And maybe that's complete now that COVID gave you its gift. I hold space for that.
Thank you. I hope so. I have hope for the boys, and I love the boys, but it seems as if that heaviness is gone. Knock on wood. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yay. All right, young lady, well, the show's going to cut us off any second. It just told me we had 10 seconds left. So I'm going to just say thank you for that conversation. It's a gift to everybody and blessings.